You may just flip over our show today as Gail, Sally, and I talk about flipped classrooms, all the tools and techniques that are now on the market that will make it easy to blend that classroom and turn it around. So stay tuned for that and much more. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, this is Martin Spriggs, and welcome back to the Wells Tech Podcast. This is episode 277 for February 26th, the year of 2013, and you're watching a podcast that talks about technology and ministry and where those two meet, and we're glad that you joined us. And I'm glad that I've got two lovely ladies joining me for the Classroom Technology Focus show that we do once a month, first of all, and as usual, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Hi, Martin. Happy to see you in blue this morning. You're looking good there.
In blue, thank you. Yes. Sally's coming to us from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota, so a state away, and coming to us from this the same state that I'm in, just a little further north, from New London, Wisconsin, Gail Potratz. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, everybody.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Okay. I heard the birds singing today on my way to school. So
that's a sign of something. Yes, looking hopefully forward. Spring. Yes. Yeah. And for those of you that don't know, once a month we do Classroom Technology Week, and Gail splits time with Jason Schmidt down in Omaha, Nebraska. And Gail, you do the technology there at New London, a pretty good sized school, and you also do language arts for eighth grade, right? Okay. I'm excited about the topic this week. This is something that I've spent some time looking at, reading about, and attended a number of conferences where this has been probably the hot topic, and that is something called flipped classrooms. It's got probably a lot of different names, but it kind of falls in that blended classroom genre, where teachers are doing some things a little bit non-traditional way. Maybe to get things started, we should talk about how we define what a flipped classroom is. Maybe not everybody's familiar with that.
Well, I will say just in general terms that it moves the teacher from being the sage on the stage to the guide by the side. Uh-huh. So we're looking at shifting from the lecture format where the teacher just gives the students the information during the class period and sends them home with their homework to deal with it, basically. Mm-hmm. Moving away from that to where they get that information prior to class, and the classroom time is spent delving into working with the information, going through the homework type activities, flipping those to the actual classroom time. Mm-hmm.
There might even be still some lecture that's done. It's just a different positioning of the lecture. So the lecture is up front as the homework. So the kids have the content and learn a little bit about the vocabulary of the lesson, the content, that kind of thing, so that when they come to class, that's all been taken care of. Because I think any teacher will tell you that the most valuable class time is the time where you're interacting with the kids around the content. Mm-hmm. So they're applying the content, practicing the skills, building on the content. And you never have enough time for that if you do traditional, because you do have to present the content, then you do that, then you do the assignment and follow-up and feedback. And that's a lot to get done in one class period. So the shift really is a great way to use class time effectively.
Right, so it's really optimizing that very precious time that happens during the day, right?
Right, and I'm just thinking about our talented Wells teachers who are oftentimes dealing with multi-grade classroom situations. And, you know, as you say, it's a lot to get done in one class period. It's a lot to get done in one class period when you have three other grade levels to deal with as well on the same topics or whatever. So, you know, I could see it being a real benefit in those kind of scenarios.
Sure. And we will provide probably far more resources than you could ever get through in any short period of time that's talking about that. It seems to be kind of an explosion right now in the educational space. So there's lots of people writing about it, lots of people talking about it. And maybe as far as we're concerned, a lot of tools being developed to aid in flipping classrooms too.
Right. And I think the reason that you're seeing so much of it now is two reasons. First of all, kids aren't doing so well. A lot of people are disappointed in test results and that those kind of things. So there's been a, you know, how can we do this differently? And then along about 2007, you had this big video and media influx with people like, well, the Khan Academy is always the one that's held up as kind of the example, but there are others. And then shortly after that, all the tools where people could make their own videos, which really, ideally, if you're going to do this, would be the best way, because you know exactly what you want to say and what your content's going to be. But it's nice that there are videos and things out there you can pick from, because it's a time saver.
Sure.
But that video explosion and the ease of making screencasts, I think, really, really got this going.
And there definitely are a lot of tools for doing that easily. Just like you said, Gail, I know that many who watch our podcast and listen know that I'm a huge TechSmith fangirl. Yay, TechSmith. And they have just an arsenal of tools, free tools like Snagit and Jing, which both allow you to record your screen and narrate along with it. Creating videos, you can post them to YouTube, our Vimeo free platforms, you know, to host your videos. They also have the great tool Camtasia Studio, and I think that's almost a standard if you're going to notch it up a level. If you want to narrate your PowerPoints and integrate some video with that and a lot of different things, Camtasia is pretty much a full-featured video editor, which is just well-suited to flipping classrooms. So that group of tools alone could definitely get anyone started in this space.
Yeah, there's these tools have been around for quite some time. Just now their application to this particular educational technique or concept is what's interesting. The tools are easy to use, and I think any teacher could pick it up pretty easily. You do need a decent computer, I think, to work with some of these tools. Sometimes they're processor intensive, so it's you know, something that you have to pay attention to. I don't even actually think you can use Chromebooks, or maybe there are tools that you could, you know, online tools now that you can. But for Camtasia Studio and those kinds of things, you really need a decent computer. Some of these tools also, well, actually the flipped classroom can rely on those, but also can rely on curated content that's already out there. And when you talk to people who are flipping classrooms, they'll be the first to tell you that, boy, it would be almost impossible to create all the content yourself. You need to find good content out there, repurpose it. And, you know, there are tools coming on the scene, you know, every day. One that we stumbled on just the other day was TED-Ed. TED conferences have been around for a while, where innovators come up and, you know, speak for a few minutes on a topic. This is kind of a takeoff on that, where you can find curated content and also have the ability to post your own content, record your own screencast, put it on YouTube, and then wrap it with different educational tools, whether they be assessment tools or thought questions or whatever, that allows the student to get in there. And along with the video playing, they can answer questions. They can jot down their own thoughts, their own narrative, whatever. Just this sounds like something that would be a boon for anybody who wants to flip a classroom.
It right. does. And they do have like 214 videos that they've created. But like you said,
they're of very high quality, too.
Exactly. They engage animators in the process. So, you know, there's definitely a good arsenal to take advantage of there. But then the ability to link to your own content that's on YouTube or wherever, and then use their tool set to build quiz items and things like that around it, is just really impressive.
Gail, what's been your experience? Are you thinking about doing stuff like this? What tools have you been using and how's it been going?
Yeah, I've done two lessons now like this, one in the first quarter and one I just did this past week. I have used eduvision.tv as my source. I found both of my pieces I wanted to use for content from that source. I didn't know about the one we were just talking about until this week, so I definitely will look into that. Mm-hmm. I have not made my own screencast. I've used other people's. I've been able to find what I needed. I found it more challenging, actually, to find the third part of the lesson. I found content that I, video content that I could use for the first part where the kids do it off to the side on their own. And then in class, no problem. We had things to do there. But then when you want them to continue practicing or doing something afterward and build on that, sometimes that's a little bit hard to find. That's the kind of thing you kind of really have to create yourself. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, like I wanted a good piece of informational writing, nonfiction writing, because we had learned about reading nonfiction and how that's different than reading fiction. And, you know, you're looking for just the piece that will pull out those skills that you've just taught. And that's sometimes a hard thing to find.
Right.
On the two lessons I've done, I've spent more time on the classroom and third piece than I have on the first. The first was the easiest.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely a new paradigm where you have to kind of think a little bit differently about every piece, because the lecture or the core content, the lesson itself happens in an independent fashion, and clearly that can present some technological challenges and also social challenges, as you have to, you know, they have to treat it seriously, and the parents probably have to be very involved in this process too and be on board too, right?
Right. One of the biggest criticisms, there's like five big criticisms you always read of this. And one of the biggest ones is, you know, kids just plugged in watching these stupid little movies. That's mm-hmm. what people say. So you do have to have good content. And to take it a step further, when you read things like, we have a link, I believe, to a video that Alan November is talking about, the pedagogy behind this. And he explains it this way, and I think his theory is very valuable to answer that question about the little videos. It isn't that the little videos are the main thing. The thing is, you want the kids to watch the videos, but then you have to provide a way for them to react to the video that you as the teacher get before the next class time. Like I just use a Google form, and they watch the video, and then if they have questions, they put them on the Google form. So I look at those, and then I can see before they come to class the next day, I am ready to address the questions. So I'm not going to just assume that I have everything they need to know. They know some things already, and now that I know their questions, I can start from there. So the video is only half of that first piece,
right,
the kids respond to the video. And I think that's one thing when people just start doing that they is kind of overlooked. And I really appreciated Alan November's piece on that, because that's key. Not everybody does that, but I think to be the most successful with this, that is an excellent idea.
And that plays right into this concept of individualized learning, where where you can meet the needs of an individual right. student versus right. assuming that everybody's on the same page and everybody's at the same place right. at the same time. And that's where that classroom experience is really changed.
Right. He says, in order to make any changes in education, you really have to change the process. And this is definitely a change in process. The old lesson plan, you know, had the same parts, really, but now you're splitting it out. So it's a change in the process. But then the other thing he says, too, is it's relational. And that's where the questions come in between the teacher and student. And then the next day, student to student. So you have a lot more student interaction, students helping students answer questions and explore the topic. Mm-hmm. And so those two things, changing the process and making it more relational, go over big with kids.
Right.
It's well received.
One of the more exciting things that I found that kind of ties that all together, Gail, and I know, Martin, you mentioned we have a lot of resources to share in our show notes today, but we did all read an article by Bernard Bull, and he came up with this visual representation of the process that before class, it's almost like getting to know someone. Nice to meet you. Let's get the terms under our belt. Let's introduce the concepts. And he does tie this to Bloom's taxonomy that you would do some a formative assessment. Maybe that's your feedback loop there, Gail, that you were describing where they could ask their questions from the video. And then he talked about the next step in maybe a dating process or whatever, if you want to parallel. Let's do something together. You know, let's meet together during class and discuss it. There's where you can get into your small groups, your peer-to-peer learning, analyze things, go over, you know, problem points, whatever it may be, and move up that Bloom's taxonomy scale to some more higher level thinking about the concept. And then finally, in the dating process, you know, let's be steady date or whatever, where you get into more of the project-based learning and creating things and actually using the knowledge to demonstrate the concepts and things. So I thought his visual very well shows that process of how a flipped classroom can teach the skills in a different way, a different educational direction than what we're used to.
Yeah, I'm zeroing in on that graphic in the middle. One of the activities was labs, and that reminds me, Aaron Sams and his teaching partner, they were like out in Colorado were like the first people who really went big with this. And they're chemistry teachers, okay, science teachers in a high school. And to me, this works. I mean, he's got videos, all kinds of videos to watch and where you can actually see the kids doing this in action. And any kind of science, of course, it lends itself so well to that interactive process. I think that it was a natural for them. And when it seems to be that with schools, when there's somebody in the school that's successful with this, it sort of catches on. Most of the things you read about are high school or middle school. Most of the things I've read are about high school, middle school type ages. I think it's interesting. There was a in Detroit or just outside of Detroit, there was a high school teacher. I think I might have included him in one of those links. Remember his name? I probably have it here somewhere. Well, anyway, he did it with math because their kids were just bombing out. They had just horrendous scores, and everybody was failing math. And you know, it was an inner city school, so they had some different challenges there too. And so he raised, there's hard data on the fact that this process was put into place and those scores came up dramatically. So when they saw that, their whole high school now, every class is done this way. So I think that's the only place I know that's really put it into effect in that grand of a scale. And I'm thinking they must build in a lot of teacher development time to do something like that, because this isn't something you're just going to throw together real easily.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of study on that, too, in the conferences that I've been at have talked a little bit about how you find the time to do this, and some of the advice is sound where you just focus maybe on you know, a day a week or a class a year. Where you do this rather than trying to do the whole thing, which would probably kill you. It's a matter of, you know, pick your sweet spots and then grow from that, learn from that. And then it becomes a little bit easier year over year. And you find, you know, that a mix of making your own and finding your own stuff is, you know, probably the way to go. But the other component and the big question that always comes up is, well, are my kids ready for this? You know, do they have an environment at home where they can, do all my kids have access to the technology necessary, or do I need to make provisions for that?
Worthy question. And there's been a lot of different ways to answer that. The school in Detroit that I was just talking about, what they did, because they have a lot of people without access, they had their school open an hour earlier every day and they stayed open longer afterwards. So kids had access to technology to do these things before and after. And by no means is this going to be a panacea where everything is just great and everybody gets on board. You're still going to have kids that don't watch. So what some teachers have done with that is you have your computer set up in your classroom and the kids come the next day and they're all into the interactive collaborating phase of things. And those kids that didn't get the content, they are on the bank of computers doing their homework that should have been last night before they can be prepared enough to, you know, enter. So they're going to be a little bit behind. But what kids like is they do better. They get more teacher one-on-one. They get more kid one-on-one. Their grades are going to be better. And most kids want that. Even the kids that, you know, maybe are a little, I'll say lazier. You know, but when they see the success that people are having and actually the fun they're having doing it, I think that's motivating. Right. So
I read somewhere that it's especially engaging for the special needs students and the gifted students, those that are kind of on the extreme
fringes, right?
That they're going to get a lot from this kind of program because of the one-to-one interaction, the delving deeper into the topic for the gifted students, whereas the normal classroom lecture might just be a bore to them. They can get past that and get into the real meat of the work and things like that. So those kind of scenarios might be really good places to try it out. And Martin, as you maybe adopt one class to do it throughout the year, then that arsenal of videos is there for the next year, and you can build upon that and move on to other classes. So once you capture these videos, you may need to revisit them and update them and things, but topics like how to factor polynomials or whatever it may be, those don't change a whole lot over time. So, right. You know, once you have that, you can reuse it. That's very powerful as well.
And I think you should be very realistic in the goals you set about how much you want to get done. I have one other person on staff here that's on board with this right now, working on it. And we said one lesson per quarter was our goal for this year. Because we did none of it in the summer. We just kind of got onto it here at the beginning of the year.
Right.
So I've done two. Let's see, we're in the third quarter, so I'm kind of behind.
I've done a lot of video lessons for different things, not obviously for traditional classrooms, but for online adult education and things. And I will say that once you get in the groove of doing the videos, they become easier to crank out. You know, there's definitely a learning curve and a period of time where you're not comfortable with the software and the platform and the you know, roadblocks that come up because this didn't process correctly or I lost my audio on this piece or whatever. Right. But once you do it, it does get easier and become a faster process.
And that's one reason you might want to start with using some of the material that's already out there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, already done. Because that doesn't have to hold you back then.
Yep.
Exactly.
All right. Well, exciting topic. And I think that those people that are interested in it will obviously see the, you know, the pluses and minuses, but be sure to check out the show notes because we've just got a ton of both foundational material and tool talk, you know, what the best strategy is. And just we're only going to see, I think, more and more of this come through the pipe here. There are actually very few books, you know, printed books on this right now. It's more in, you know, the blogosphere and presentations and those kinds of things. But I think that's going to change over time as well. So it's not hard to find a ton of research out there already if you just do a search on Google. So. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's move on, ladies. We do have a ministry resource to share this week, Sally.
We do. And this is thanks to one of our listeners, Jimmy Pouts, who tweeted about this and used the #WellsTech hashtag on Twitter. So we found a link to WordPress.com/classrooms, a brand new launch just announced this week, actually, where they are actually tailoring the WordPress.com site to create blogs for classroom use. And so they give you ideas of how you can engage your students and connect with parents. You can privatize your blogs. You can create multiple blogs for different classrooms. And manage it all on WordPress.com. And even at the bottom, they have examples of different classroom sites and how they're using WordPress.com for their classroom websites. So I know we've talked in the past about EduBlogs, which is built on the WordPress platform and allows you to easily set up a classroom blog site. But now you can actually kind of EduBlogs is tied to about three different themes. That's all that you have available to you. Now you can actually make use of the whole WordPress arsenal of themes and plugins and get a lot more customized site than you can on the EduBlog site, but still know that you're creating something geared for classrooms that has the privatization and those kind of things in mind as you build it. WordPress.com is completely free. I think you can add a domain name if you want for something like $17 a year.
Really cheap,
so very affordable to start and maintain a classroom website. It doesn't even have to really be a blog format where you're chronologically posting things. If you want to do a different format, you can get pretty creative with WordPress. So check out WordPress.com/classrooms, all you teachers out there.
Yeah, Blogging Engine, I think, has a lot of things going for it as far as the teacher is concerned. Not only can students use it to post their thoughts, a teacher can too, or assignments and so on and so forth. But, it can be used as an assignment list, calendar, all those kinds of things, because it is in a chronological, order, and something that even parents could log into and see what's going on in the class. Mm-hmm.
When you have sick kids like I do right upstairs today, it's nice to be able to go online and get their assignments and things.
So yep.
Lots of potential there for a classroom website.
Cool. So that's our ministry resource. Let's move on to our picks of the week. Gail, did you find something for us this week that caught your interest?
Yeah, I did. And it has nothing to do with the flipped classroom, but I am kind of a, techno lust person.
That's right.
Sometimes I see these things that are cool that really, anyway, I found the application called Bump. It's BU.MP. So if you go to their site, BU.MP, while you're on that site, you can watch a little movie about how simple this is. Really, what you're going to be able to do is you're going to be able to take your photos, your files, your videos, anything you have on your camera, and very quickly put them onto your computer.
Your camera phone.
Right, and this is for Android iPhone, so it'll work with either one. So you go out, you get the app. So you go get the app on your phone. You do have to have your computer set to that website, the Bump website, and then you click on the app for Bump, and then it'll show you all your stuff, and you just click what is it that you want to move over, and then you just bump it on the space bar of your computer, and it goes actually not really to your computer. It goes, of course, to their server. And then if you want, you can look at it all. Then if you really want it on your computer, you download it. So there is that step too, but it's just kind of neat because being an iPhone user, I do think that's pretty cool that the Samsung things can bump each other and trade playlists. Although I'm not sure anybody would want to trade playlists with me. I don't have much of a playlist. Yeah. But I think that technology is so cool. So when I saw this, I just had to try it. And I think it is useful because I do take pictures. I'm somewhere with my iPhone and I'm taking a lot of pictures. I don't always want to keep them on my phone. I have trouble separating my school pictures from my other life pictures. And so now I can just put them on the computer and get them where they really need to go pretty easily.
Cool. Yeah, Bump's been around for a long time, the ability to share information from phone to phone or device to device. Now they've added the feature of allowing you to get that content from your phone to your device to your computer without having to, plug in the USB or
right.
Some kind of other Wi-Fi syncing, which can be somewhat problematic. So, cool. BU.MP, or just search for Bump on your iPhone or Android. And free.
Yeah.
All right, Sally, you're in the
My
batter's
turn.
Box.
Yep, mine is tied to flipped classrooms, actually. It's a literature resource. We talk a lot about Khan Academy and all the science and math that's out there. But this website is called 60 Second Recap, and it's 60 and then spelled out secondrecap.com. 60 Second Recap has a library of short video overviews of different classic literature, particularly geared probably to high school level reading. So they have all these different books, and then when you click on a particular book, you get a series. Even though it's called 60 seconds, you don't just get one 60-second video. You get a series of videos where there's like a video about an overview of the book, the plot of the book, the different characters in the book, you know, different themes and motifs and symbolism and things like that. So in this example that I'm looking at on the screen right now, it's about the adventures of Huckleberry Finn. And there's 11 different 60-second videos that recap the book. And so this might be something you would assign for your students to get an overview of the theme, for instance, before you have that discussion in class as you're reading the book together. And I think they're very well done. Looks like a single girl that's kind of behind all of this that puts the videos together. And she has you know, different videos that come up where she's looking at more current books and things like that. So it's not just a static list. She's always adding to it. There's also a component of the website called Club Recap where people can upload their own recaps of books. And here I've found some like middle school level reading and things like that. And there's a whole list of club recaps that are available there. And so kids doing their own recaps and uploading them to the site and sharing them. So obviously you want to preview the content before you share it with your classroom, but that would be true of any curated type content that you're going to find out there on the web. So I think it's one in a space, the literature space is not so rich as the math and science with all these kind of videos already out there. And this 60 second recap may be a site you want to link to or at least review if you're a high school lit teacher for sure.
Cool.
So there you have it.
Gail, you're in the language arts space. Had you heard of this resource?
Sally just shared it with me the other day. And unfortunately, cool. It's mostly high school.
It is, yeah.
Things, so.
The ability for the kids to post their own, I think that's a cool feature.
That is very neat. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. My pick of the week is not necessarily flipped classroom related, although it may have some application here as well. It's called OwnCloud, OwnCloud. A lot of us are familiar with things like Dropbox and SugarSync and Google Drive and, you know, online syncing and sharing tools, file sharing. This is actually an open source version of those. So some guys got together and created an open source project, said, you know, why should I have to pay Dropbox to store my files when I've got perfectly good space on my own web server? And that's what OwnCloud is good for. If you have your own hosting space, or even if you have one internal to, let's say, your school building, you've got server space. This is a tool that you can install. It needs to be on a web server, needs to run on a certain version of PHP, but those are fairly pedestrian requirements. So you install this, and basically, and I can show you what it you know, looks like when I've got this installed on my server. Yeah, basically, you upload any file you want, and depending on the space that you've got on your server, you can upload, you know, just huge files and a lot of them and organize them any way you want. They've got some built-in tools here, like a music player. They do have a calendar and contacts list. You can view pictures or slideshows. They do have a video viewer. You can create folders, and what's great about this is it has really all the features that like a Dropbox does as well, where you can share files and folders, either open to the public or with a password, or by user account, so they need a username and password. It also has syncing applications. So for Mac, Windows, Linux, you can have a desktop syncing tool where anything you put in that will automatically be uploaded, or anything you upload will automatically be synced across all your computers plus devices. Android and iPhone both have apps that you can install, so you have access just like you do for Dropbox. So it's kind of a roll your own Dropbox kind of tool, except it's free. And if you have free storage, like any nonprofit can go to dreamhost.com and get a nonprofit account for absolutely free, which I do believe includes unlimited storage. You can have all this stuff in the cloud as long as you're a little bit technical and can maintain, you know, this open source tool. And it does auto update as well, so it's not something that you have to, you know, do a lot of coding for. This may be a perfect solution for some of our schools or other organizations that want to have shared file access. And each person can have their own folder if you want, or their own account. It all gets stored on your web server. And it's got a nice interface. It's been around for a little bit, but I think they just released a new version. And it's an active project, so they're constantly fixing bugs and adding features. So
there's where you could store all of your video content for your flipped classroom.
Exactly. Yeah, there is a video player that is available where you click on a file and it'll play in the window. So it's, I think it's got some potential. And there are other things like this, but this is probably the most popular kind of roll your own file sharing tool.
Excellent. Great find.
Let's move on to our community feedback section.
And I'm excited about the things that were shared this week. Let me just share my screen real quick. Those watching video can follow along. This is a link shared by Rachel Pearson on the DIGO website. And you can share things with us on DIGO as well. Just join our Wells Tech DIGO group. This is actually a blog article, and it's authors who will Skype with classrooms and book clubs for free. And this lady has gone through and put together a list, an amazingly detailed list. Another find for our English teachers out there in the audience, where there's just tons of authors that will Skype with your classroom. And this starts with ages 8 through 12. It goes up to teenagers and different authors that are available for teen groups as well. And then even for adult book clubs and picture book clubs for young readers. So just an exhaustive list of authors. So if you're working on a particular piece, you might want to check this out and bring the author to your classroom.
Yeah, bring the world into the classroom. Great concept. Yeah. And I'm assuming that all these authors would do it without compensation. Is that
That's what it says, yeah. Okay. So, yeah.
That's cool. I like that.
Yeah. Good list.
Yeah.
Also via DIGO, we heard from Tom Rosenau, and he pointed us to a Google Chrome plugin that works for Gmail. It's called Cloudy, and Cloudy allows you to attach things from your cloud-based storage to Gmail. And for those of you that use something like Dropbox or whatever, it's a pain sometimes if you want to email someone the actual files that you have stored out there in the cloud. And what this does is actually connect to those cloud-based storage locations, like I said, like Dropbox or Google Drive or Picasa or Flickr, whatever it may be. It has a whole group of them. And then when you are working in your Gmail account and you want to attach one of those files, it will make that connection for you. It actually downloads the file to your computer so that it can then attach the file. It's a temporary thing. It gets rid of it and cleans up after itself and things like that. So, I think it's an impressive plugin, and if you're a Chrome user and especially a Gmail user, you may want to check this out.
So this is not just a link to the document. This actually goes out, fetches the document, brings it down, attaches it, and then sends it out.
Absolutely. So,
okay. Yeah, because Google just last month, I think we talked about the ability to point at a large file, let's say on Google Drive, and automatically create that link. This is a little bit different. Cool.
Right. So, yeah, I'm sure there's scenarios where you just want to link to the document and share it that way so that other people are looking at it in your cloud, but this is actually attaching the document.
Cool.
So, and Tom's note was that it works for Google Apps as well. So, I'm not a Google Apps user, but...
Sometimes there is a difference that the general Google population can do things Google Apps can't do and vice versa. So you have to be sure that it works in your scenario.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just opening up a link, Martin. This is one that you tagged on DIGO. It's called Free Education Apps Sorted by Grade Level. And you found this on the Edudemic website.
Yep, this is one of my new favorite sites. Again, it's just another one of those lists. But yeah, 40 free ed apps sorted by grade level, which is kind of cool. So you can jump into the area that you're most interested in and run through the app. Most of these, I think, are iPad type apps, so it's geared toward that. But it's they've got a nice little chart there, and you can figure out what might make sense for you. Always good for discovering new things and cool things.
Excellent. And Gail, I'm going to jump to one that you shared on Twitter to go along with Martin's find. This was an app directory that you found. And I think your comment was, it's nice that it's teacher put together, teacher made index. So, right. And very well done. Also from Rachel on Twitter, there was an article that she tagged, "Are Teachers of Tomorrow Prepared to Use Innovative Tech?" And it actually is interesting because on the MLC Continuing Ed blog, they were talking about how teachers of tomorrow are coming out with more tech, and are we correctly preparing them, to use more technology in their classroom and stuff. And this one is, kind of questioning that. Are they really getting the preparation that they need? Because the expectations are going up, up, up in terms of using technology in the classroom to do things like flipping and those kind of things. So just kind of looking at our education system and interesting food for thought for those that are educating educators.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And then finally, Gail, I also had one tweet from you that was tagged with Wells Tech about the Chromebook Pixel that's coming out. And I guess what I found most interesting, and I'm sure it's an interesting read to hear about the new Chromebook Pixel, the next generation of Chromebooks that's coming on the market. But your comment was that you wouldn't necessarily go with Chromebooks except for the financial win situation there with that.
This is an interesting piece, a challenge to the other computer companies like Chrome, because their market has been blossoming because of the cost factor, the pricing model. But now they come out with this thing that costs almost as much as a MacBook Pro, and it's got the pixels are the resolution.
Great resolution, yeah.
It's like the MacBook Pro with their Retina display.
Right.
They have this big fancy resolution, and it's touchscreen, which to me, if I have a laptop, that's the last thing I want to do is take my hands off the keyboard and touch the screen, which seems strange. And the price, I mean, it's still just a browser.
Yeah, I don't think the play here is in the educational space. This is going to be, kind of that device that Google touts as, yeah, we can be a real computer too, even with the Chrome operating system.
Who would buy that over a,
Yeah. Company CEO is probably, it's probably in the executive office kind of space.
Maybe the people that had BlackBerries before just because they had a BlackBerry, even though they didn't know how to use it.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So it's probably not a large appeal here to our audience, but it's interesting that they're doing this. And
it's
we're going to see that trend going forward of, I think all laptops are going to have touch screens. It's hard with Windows 8 now coming out, which is really touch enabled. A lot of the computers that you're buying today are where you can reach out and touch that screen. And maybe that makes sense because we're used to the whole iPad or tablet experience where some people that work on those and then get back to their laptop touch the screen just because that's habit.
It's like,
well, why isn't this working?
Right.
So I think that's where things are headed. And then the convertible laptop where it can be a laptop and a tablet if you kind of flip the screen around.
It just goes to the point that, the company's marketing, competitive, like with Microsoft's 365 now.
Right.
So it's challenging Google. They're always going to just challenge each other. And that's good in a sense because that should improve things.
Right. The competition is good. So, Seth, that's it for feedback, Sally?
Yes, sir. That'll do it for this week.
Very good. Please send us your feedback, wellstech.wells.net. Enter a comment there or look across the top and all kinds of other ways to connect. Sally mentioned using Digo, Twitter, Facebook, Google+, Pinterest. All of those places are ways that you can connect with us, and we'd be happy if you did. Next week, we're going to be talking to Pastor Rob Gunther from Kenai, Alaska, about his self-publishing project. So any of you out there that have stuff that you maybe want to get in print, Rob's got a great story to tell because it's easier than you think. So tune in next week. Let's close the show with a new artist. Michael Armstrong is new to the show, and he's a singer, a Wells singer, songwriter, great music. And we are going to play a song that's very appropriate for the Lenten season called Overwhelmed. So welcome, Michael. And thank you, everybody, for joining us. Tune in next week. We'd love to have you again.
Come to meet us if we just believe.